Welcome to Parents Perspective. Okay, okay, grumbled 14-year-old Josh from his room. I'll be down in a minute. What are you doing for so long up there? Called his mom. I didn't put dinner out to get cold, you know. Just finishing this game. Josh's voice was muffled. Almost to the end. Josh, his mom shouted. A game! A game! Get down here now! It's a wonder that boy's eyes don't fall right out of his head, Josh's grandfather put down his coffee cup. He seems to spend all of his time in front of that screen. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about the effects of extensive screen time on our children's eyes? I'm Linda Perlis. Sandy Burt is unable to be with us today. She's just become the grandmother of a new baby girl and is out of town. Our guest works with the eyes of children and adults and sees the effects of their life experiences on their sight. Dr. Sanford Cohen is a developmental optometrist for children and adults of all ages. His special interests include the management of individuals with developmental delays, learning-related vision problems, and vision difficulties that interfere with occupational, avocational, and athletic achievement. In addition to prescribing conventional and therapeutic glasses and contact lenses, Dr. Cohen remediates vision problems utilizing vision therapy. He's the father of a son and a daughter, both in their 20s. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Cohen.
Thank you for having me, Linda.
What is the biggest myth about children's eyesight?
Well, the biggest myth about children's and even adults' eyesight is that 20/20 indicates perfect vision or good vision. And so what I like to tell is that there are about 30 vision abilities that we learn starting actually before we're born. And one of those abilities is seeing with clarity or seeing 20/20 acuity. But there are many more visual abilities that we need in order to function in our world as we begin to explore our world as tiny infants. And one of the ways to think about it is that if you see something clearly but you really don't know what to do with it, then you're not really getting the full impact of that visual image. So I like to speak of eyesight as the sense of whether or not I can see a certain size letter or a certain size object. However, vision is taking that image, integrating it with other images that we take in at the same time, and integrating that with previous memories and experiences so that then we can take an action on what we've seen. So vision, oftentimes in my literature, we read the term vision as motor. Vision is taking what we see and doing something with it so then we can take the next action. So it's basically input with memories, experiences, so then we can perform an action.
It's much more complicated than I thought.
It sure is.
What's the most important thing that you would like parents to remember?
Probably the most important thing to remember is that vision changes as rapidly as kids grow. In adulthood, the processes are very slow, whereby the vision problems can evolve more slowly. In kids, they develop more quickly, therefore vision problems can surface much more quickly, and so we have to be very attentive. When I do developmental evaluations, for example, let's say I see a six-year-old, I'm very quick to point out to the parent that I'm taking a moment in time and learning about where your child has developed up to this point in time. But vision continues to develop. Therefore, I need to see your child at regular intervals, and we can try to prevent things from getting worse.
When I was little, many of us were told that if we read with insufficient light, we would damage our eyesight. What are the effects of different kinds of light on children's sight?
What happens in insufficient illumination is that it makes it more difficult for the focusing mechanism of the eyes to focus in accurately on the plane of the material that you are reading. So that the dimmer the light, the more the focusing mechanism fluctuates. The more it fluctuates, the more it can fatigue the visual system. And when you have more visual stress, you're much more likely to give up something in return for being able to stay on task. Those are the type of people and kids who will give up seeing clearly at distance and lose clarity at distance in order to be able to function at near. So that's one way to start the process of myopia or developing nearsightedness. The other thing that happens when you're under visual stress is in order to see better, you'll take that reading material and you'll generally get closer to it. And when you get closer to it, that only increases the stress level on the eyes, probably makes things worse. So in working with kids and adults who are beginning to show myopia or nearsightedness, I am very adamant about trying to maintain a minimum working distance to at least cut down on the stress involved on the task, and secondly, having appropriate lighting. Now, appropriate lighting means having good ambient light, which means good background lighting, and then there should be lighting directly on the source of what you're doing, where that most commonly should come not just from one angle, but actually from two sides, so there are no shadows. I honestly think that the now going out of favor incandescent bulbs are still a very nice way of lighting our environment for reading purposes. The general concept to keep in mind with lighting is that the room should be lit, and then there should be lighting directly on the source. So like reading in bed at night with just a lamp on next to your bed is really a very poor way to light the book you're reading. Secondly, reading in bed is not really the best thing for your eyes and body either.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the effects of extensive screen time on children's eyes.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with developmental optometrist Dr. Sanford Cohen about the effects of extensive screen time on children's eyes. In today's world, children's eyes are focused very frequently on different kinds of screens, not just television screens. What does extensive screen time do to a youngster's eyes?
The specific question could be interpreted as, is there anything inherently wrong with screens that could damage our kids' eyes? And the answer is not in today's electronic market. The problem with excessive screen time is no different than the problem of excessive reading. It's more what you're not doing if you're a young child than what you are doing. Young children, let's say preschoolers and younger, that whole category from all the way up to maybe kindergarten, first grade, really should not be spending large numbers of minutes doing any type of concentrated near visual activity. A concentrated near visual activity is reading and drawing and computing. Those are concentrated near vision activities that young eyes are not ready for. They need, in fact, to be out side or working in real space to spend the time and years preschool integrating their eyes with their hands, their legs, body movements, and being able to judge distances in space. This plays a role later in terms of cognitive development because you need to have a very keen awareness of space. And the only way to get an awareness of space is to move through that space, to interact with that space. So when you're looking at a screen, you are not interacting with space. Secondly, a lot of times the cognitive demand of these activities, while we think our children are developing great cognitive skills, I'm not so sure that all these children are ready for these cognitive activities. They're replacing higher level stimulation for what they need is lower level physical movement through the environment. And I don't know how this will play out over time, but I do believe that I'm seeing a lot more early age myopia and nearsightedness because the eyes are too focused on screens up close, be it little handheld computer screens or bigger desktop or laptop computers. And if we have more experience looking out into space and interacting with space, we're going to have less of a chance of becoming nearsighted. So statistics are showing that kids are becoming nearsighted at younger ages than they used to.
So what constitutes extensive screen time?
Well, that would be somewhat age dependent. My guidelines have been that if you're going to be looking at a computer monitor and you are a kid, and I will define a kid as, let's say, elementary school and younger, that no more than 20 minutes total before you really get away from the activity for probably an equal amount of time. And within that 20 minutes, you really want to give your eyes a break, looking up, focusing across the room for 30 seconds or so for about every 5 minutes. Now, as you get older, you can handle longer periods of time doing a visual task, a near-concentrated visual task. But still, it is desirable to take visual breaks where you refocus to something very far away approximately every 5 to 10 minutes for at least 30 seconds or as long as 60 seconds. And then as you get older, you need to really take more physical breaks from the activity as well. For every hour of work, you need to be walking around for a good 5 minutes and let your eyes focus on something distant. If you get up for 5 minutes and you get away from your computer and you go and you check your emails on your phone, that doesn't count.
Do you include television time?
I do. It's hard to limit the television time, but again, the kids are much better off replacing that time with physical activities, which will help their vision develop to a higher level. And that's very important as a prerequisite for school. School, it's been estimated that up to 80% of what a child learns is through the visual system. So as a parent, you've got to prepare the child's vision for school.
Some children are very interested in learning letters and decoding the ability to read young.
You mean like preschool?
Yes. Is that something to encourage or just kind of let them do what they're doing but don't do too much encouragement of that?
The latter. If they want to pursue it, let them do it on their own. But I would not gear their activities to promote development of that at an early age. For example, how do we tell the difference between a lowercase b and a lowercase d? If you're a parent and you've seen your kids learn this differentiation, you'll know that there's a time during which they'll call a d a b and a b a d. And as a parent, you look at it and you say, I don't understand how they can't see that that loop is on the right side on this letter, and it's on the left side on this other letter. For kids, until they really learn their bodies and learn that there is a right side and a left side of their bodies, and then that they learn to project it out into space, a B and a D will look the same because they have no reference for knowing that that loop on a B is on the right, not on the left. And it's very important that they go through the developmental phases where they acquire this knowledge of their body before they can then understand that a B is always a B and they will not get mixed up.
Is there prevention of too much screen time that parents should be employing?
Well, I think you just need to regulate. And then if your child is one of those that's going to do a lot of near vision type activities, it's imperative to know whether they have the visual abilities to handle it.
So there are differences when you talk about a child's age.
Absolutely. For example, we all use eye movements the moment we open our eyes. There are two types of eye movements, generally speaking. One is what we call a smooth pursuit eye movement, which is if you are tracking an object moving towards you or across from left to right, your eyes will be following it in a very smooth trajectory. That's called a smooth pursuit movement. Now, humans don't use those very frequently. The other type of movement, which we use much more commonly, especially with reading or in copying, are called saccadic eye movements. And those are the movements that we use when our eye looks in one place and then jumps to another place. Reading is a series of very practiced, very consistent eye movements. It takes 7.5 to 8 years to learn those eye movements. That is a long time. And there are developmental phases that kids go through. So if we're asking a child to do reading activities or activities on a screen, which is two-dimensional, not three-dimensional like our world that we live in, and we're asking them to restrict their eye movements and they don't have the ability to do those eye movements, what's going to happen? Well, if they persist at the activity, then it's very possible that they'll get frustrated and they could just begin to dislike these types of activities and may, in fact, begin to avoid such activities. If they're highly motivated and they're successful, it could lead to maladaptations like nearsightedness or strabismus or other types of conditions. Strabismus technically means when one eye does not aim in the same point in space with the other eye. So if your child wants to do these kinds of activities, you as a parent would like to know, gee, do they have the visual equipment to handle it? And if not, how can I have them do things to develop the ability to handle it? Or are there things that we can utilize to sort of minimize the damage to the eyes, which is a prevention? And that gets back to the question you're asking me. Some kids may need lenses, not a corrective lens, but as a therapeutic lens or a preventative lens to help their eyes focus. If you think back to my description of what happens in poor lighting, I said that focusing mechanism has a lot of trouble knowing where to focus when illumination is not bright enough. Also, if a person is engaged in any sustained visual activity, it's stressful to sustain focus for long periods of time, and therefore you can fatigue. So what we can do with lenses is prescribe lenses to sort of support the focusing mechanism so it does not have to work quite as hard and it will be able to sustain the activity longer, thereby sort of slowing or preventing any kind of deterioration in function. Another one was to make sure your child takes frequent breaks and gets up from what they're doing and engage in conversation. You really need to talk about what you see to help build what's called visualization abilities. If we just simply go through the world looking, looking, and looking and don't practice communicating what we're seeing, we're really losing the opportunity to develop our language as well as our visualization ability, which then can impact reading. You need to be able to visualize what you're reading in order to get the full experience from it. And so one of the things I like to encourage parents to do, especially when we start talking about remediation, if I test a child and they have poor visualization abilities, by visualization, what I mean is being able to see things from other perspectives. And inclusive in that is visual memory, remembering what you've seen, that I want to coach parents to always talk about things that the child has experienced with them. So there can be this transfer of what you've seen to a language where you can express what you've seen. It does help with reading and getting, I think, more out of reading.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on the effects of extensive screen time on children's eyes.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with developmental optometrist Dr. Sanford Cohen about the effects of extensive screen time on children's vision. Are there certain things parents should be looking for all the time as children develop?
Of course, you need to be sure that in the first year of life, the child has good eye contact with you. That's vital. If a child does not have good eye contact, you really have to suspect that something is going wrong either visually or physically with the child. Secondly, you want to be aware of the important stages of development that help support the visual system. One is obviously eye contact. Two is rolling over. So you don't want to inhibit that. That gets down to making sure you provide a child ample opportunities to explore space without restrictions. So an example of a restriction might be putting them in a swing too much of the time. Let them explore space. A child should crawl before creeping. Crawling is when you are on your torso and you're pulling yourself along the ground with your arms and legs. And if you can visualize a marine crawl or a marine in a movie crawling under the barbed wire, that's crawling. And that's really one of the first times that a child has to integrate the right and left sides of their body with their eyes so intimately. Then the next stage to encourage is creeping. Creeping is when you're up on all fours moving, and there are actually different types of creeping phases and stages. So that's important to encourage that. We don't want to skip those two phases because they give the visual system ample opportunity to interact with the body in what we call reciprocal interweaving, where the right and the left side are constantly coordinating with one another. And the eyes, the role that the eyes play is that when you are a child and you want to crawl, why do you want to crawl? Well, I want to go from here to there. You're looking over there, so you're integrating what you see with your body. Then you got to get over there, and then you can finally reach for it and grab it. And creeping is just a faster way to get there. And then after creeping, you can get up and begin to walk. So these are important developmental stages that help support the visual system. As a parent, you might ask yourself, well, I don't really see the big deal. Well, my suggestion is you get on the ground and you try crawling and seeing how things look from a crawling perspective. Then get up on all fours and see how things look from a creeping perspective. And then get up on your two legs and see how the same thing looks from a standing up perspective. And what you'll find is these are different views. These are different ways for us to see our world and interact with our world. And again, these are all important in building that very, very fine pyramid of experience that ultimately will take us to the point where we can look at something 100 feet away and know everything about it without having to walk over there and touch it and feel it.
Sometimes you hear of children who get up and walk very young, and they don't necessarily go through all these stages.
No, they don't. And I worry about those because you just don't know what they've missed in their experience. A lot of times when we look back, you know, I see a nine-year-old child who's having learning difficulties, and we start asking questions about early development. Parent might say, you know, hopefully will say, I definitely remember that my child did not creep and crawl, that she started walking at 7.5 months. And so that may very well be a child because they missed this early interaction with the right and left sides of their bodies pulling against gravity. That may mean that they've missed a small experience that sort of takes away from their potential. And can you make up for that lost time? The odds are you probably can't totally do it because in development, the key is things unfolding in a certain sequence. In therapy, we try to go back and give a child experience in those early phases so that they have the opportunity to do so. Another area of importance are primitive reflexes. If you remember as a parent, early on when your infant is born and there's a reflex that is invoked by just rubbing the cheek, the child will always turn to that side to look for a nipple. That's called a primitive reflex. And humans have many of those. They arrive at a certain point in time, either in utero or after birth, and they should be inhibited or they should disappear from activity at a certain point in time. And several of those are vital to vision development. And so as a parent, you want your child to be in that crib, you know, laying on their stomach and looking to one side and letting their fingers stimulate their eyes. That's the asymmetric tonic neck reflex.
Even today when it's back to sleep and everybody puts the child on the back, they learn to roll over.
Yes, they do. And that's important because the fingers help to stimulate the eyes. Now, when you're on your back, you can do the same thing. If your head rolls to the one side, the hand will go up. But it's a little different doing it on your back than on your stomach.
Dr. Cohen, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
There are several good resources. Organizations I would recommend, number one, would be College of Optometrists in Vision Development. We call it COVD. The website is www.covd.org. You can find books, you can find practitioners, you can find a load of information on vision development for people of all ages. Second source would be the Optometric Extension Program Foundation. That is an organization that primarily is involved with educating behavioral optometrists, but there is adequate information on the website for non-practitioners as well. A third excellent resource is Developmental Delay Resources, devdelay.org, devdelay.org. You'll get information about vision and the other senses as well. On devdelay.org, there are some excellent books. Your Child's Vision, I believe, is carried there by Richard Kavner.
A special thank you, Dr. Sanford Cohen, for joining us to share your expertise and experience about the effects of extensive screen time on children's eyes. It's mind-boggling how much we really don't know unless we consult an expert.
Well, thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 430. Spell anything that's not obvious for us so we can be in touch with you. And please tell us what station you're listening to. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice as a podcast. This is Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.